just coasting along on Gore's PRV.
And a very good morning to you, John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, back with you for another program of The Law and You this Tuesday morning. Your opportunity to get free legal advice between now and 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock if you're south of the border. All we ask you to do is get on that telephone early. The number is 5520888. That number again, 5520888. And for our listeners south of the Tweed River, of course, don't forget that you need to put 07 in front of that number if you're going to get through. 5520888, The Law and You, please ring early so that we can deal with the calls not only for your benefit, but for the benefit of other listeners who may have similar problems. And thank you also to all of the people who rang in last week and made it such an interesting program. Certainly some many and varied calls there, and that's always quite useful. And also a message emailed in to the office during the week that I'll get to in a minute. But before we go any further, we need to say good morning to Brian. G'day, Brian. How are you?
Good morning, John.
How can I help you today?
In respect to a divorce,
yep.
How soon should the settlement take place? Can the husband drag it on, or what's the normal conclusion?
Well, the property, if the marriage is broken down irretrievably, the property settlement can take place before the divorce. So the requirement for divorce is that the parties are separated and the marriage is broken down irretrievably, and they have to be separated for a period of 12 months.
Yes.
And I mean, there are circumstances where that separation can actually be under the same roof, but
yes.
But the application for property settlement can be brought at any time after the relationship is broken down irretrievably,
yes.
And can then also be brought for a period of up to 12 months after the date of divorce.
Right. Now, can the husband drag this on?
Well, only to the extent that the system will allow them to. So if the wife has got a competent family lawyer acting for her, then she should be able to really keep the pressure on the other side to ensure that it is that it goes through fairly promptly. So so that's the secret, to make sure that the that whoever, you know, if you're barracking for the wife, for example, that you make sure that she has a lawyer acting for her who really knows how to operate within the family law environment and is able to keep the pressure on the other side, so that where they try to delay, you know, she can bring applications to the court or get orders to force the other side to comply quickly. And those orders are effective. I know just one matter that's gone through our office in recent times where the person involved is actually someone known to me, and the other side there, oddly enough in that situation, it was the wife who was trying to delay and delay, and it was the husband who really wanted to push it and get the matter completed, and they were able to do that. So it just goes to show that, you know, if you really do know how to apply that pressure and keep the matter pushing forward, then you will get an outcome.
Right. Just another one, John, please. Mm-hmm. You know, self-managed super fund on a commercial vehicle, it has a superannuation has been used to buy a commercial building.
Mm-hmm.
Can that be transferred over from the party who holds the fund to the wife?
Normally what will happen is that the super fund may be split, and the wife might receive that property as part of that split. But they'd really need to speak to someone who specialises in that area to get advice on that, Brian.
Thank you, Brian. All the very best. Bye.
And the time on 4CRB is just past, 24 minutes to 10, 24 minutes to 11, daylight saving time, and we say good morning to Bill. G'day, Bill. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you. Well, John, we purchased a soup maker through a TV channel last year in in the month of July.
Mm-hmm.
We're very happy with it and happy with the deal, but we travelled and for 5 months, and during the time the item was only used once.
Mm-hmm.
On return, we put it on and we found two ball bearings fell out of it, and then we the jug leaked, and then we put it back on again, and the thing caught. Well, it smoked, and that's how we turned it off.
Mm-hmm.
We phoned the company in the book, mm-hmm. and they said, too bad, it's out of warranty.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what can we do about this?
What was the warranty?
A one-year warranty.
Right, okay. So, right, well, that it's not automatic that the warranty will only be 12 months, Brian. Under Australian consumer law, the warranty is in fact a reasonable period of time that the item should remain serviceable. So I would say that if, you know, we're only just at the end of October, and when did you contact the company about it?
Last week.
Right, okay. What I would suggest you do is contact the Office of the Consumer Ombudsman in relation to it. And just see what assistance they can give you in relation to it, because I really do think that, you know, given that it's only, well, only a couple of months out of the warranty, I'd be very surprised if they weren't prepared to assist you in applying some pressure to the company to get it replaced. So the best idea there would be to ring Consumer Affairs in the first instance.
Do you have a number, please?
Yes. Are you in Queensland or New South Wales?
Yes, Queensland.
Okay, so the number is 137468.
137468.
Okay. Yeah, so what I'm talking about is basically statutory warranty. So you do have the manufacturer's warranty, but there's also statutory warranty, which is sort of a vague thing. But it basically says, well, you know, an object should be reasonably serviceable for a reasonable period of time, given the price you pay for it and the type of object that it is. So in the circumstances you outline, on the face of it, it would seem to me that that this particular item has not performed reasonably, and I would think that you'd have a pretty good shot at being able to get the item replaced. The other thing too would be what the warranty actually says, whether the warranty says that it's a replacement warranty or whether it's a money back guarantee. So you'd need to look at that as well. All
okay,
right then.
Thank you very much.
Okay then, Bill. All the very best, and I hope you can get back to your soup making.
So do I. I want to lose some weight.
Good on you. All the best.
Thanks.
And the time on 4CRB continues to march along. It's just coming up to 20 minutes to 10, 20 minutes to 11, daylight saving time. The Law and You is the program. 5520888 is the telephone number. If you're needing some free legal advice today, that number again, 5520888. And we'd probably like some ladies to call to introduce some gender balance, because all our callers this morning thus far have been from the male side of the species. And again, we say good morning to Peter. G'day, Peter. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Fraser. Thank you for taking this call.
No trouble. How can I help?
I'm very well, thank you.
That's
good. I hope you are too.
I am indeed.
Good. John, I'm just trying to get my head around wills and superannuation and the revisionary and binding nominations that's got to be set up. We're currently setting up our super accounts as pension accounts,
right,
to pay us a pension to top up our Centrelink pensions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the super fund wants to know who are the beneficiaries and what type we have selected, i.e.
Mm-hmm.
Binding or revisionary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we select binding and then I die and my wife receives the funds, so she'll get a lump sum,
right,
which to me may affect her Centrelink pension or even cancel it out altogether. But if we select a revisionary bonus, then the super fund pays her my pension for the term of the fund.
Yes.
Am I right in assuming that?
Well, it's probably more properly a question for Finance Forum on a Thursday, Peter, rather than for me, but it's certainly off the top of my head, my understanding is that if you do have a reversionary pension and you nominate your wife to receive the pension after your death, then yes, it will go on and pay her until her passing.
Right, yeah, well, that's what I understood.
Mm. So what you probably need to look at, and this would probably be a good question for Tony Walker on Thursday on Finance Forum, is whether you can put in place so that both you and your wife will receive the reversionary pensions, and that on the death of the survivor, you might then want to have a binding death benefit nomination in place as to whether any balance of the super is to go.
Right, okay. I was just wondering whether if I did pass and my revisionary pension went to my wife, she could actually cash it in and convert it in her pension account.
Yeah, she certainly can. That's one of the detriments of doing that. But I suppose the question is, does that really matter in your situation? It matters more in a situation where you're talking about a second marriage and there are children to a first marriage. Those sort of circumstances. But if you would normally have made a will which says I leave everything to my wife and she would make a will that says I leave everything to you, and if we both drop off the perch it goes to our kids, then it probably doesn't really matter that much.
Right, okay. How do we incorporate these changes in our wills?
Well, your will won't have anything to do with your superannuation because super is completely outside of your will. The only exception is that if you were to provide in the, if it is possible under the trust deed that you've got for your super fund to have a reversionary pension to your wife or to you, depending on who died first, and then to put a binding death benefit nomination in place, it'd be a question of who you wanted the beneficiaries of that binding death benefit nomination to be. If you wanted it to be dealt with under your will, then you would specify that your legal personal representative was your was to be the beneficiary, and then the super would then go into your will and be dealt with in accordance with the terms of your will. But you don't. It's quite a misunderstanding on the part of most people that you can actually say in your will where you want your super to go. You can't unless the super is left to your legal personal representative.
Right, okay.
All
so
right.
The super fund advisor is advising a revisionary pension on the basis that it can be changed by the my wife if she wants to.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. But I would suggest that you give Tony a call on Thursday and just discuss those issues a little further with him.
All right, thank you.
All right,
thank
then.
You for your time.
Okay, Peter, all the very best. And the time on 4CRB is just coming up to 15 and a half minutes to 10, 15 and a half minutes to 11, south of the border, as we say good morning to Rex. G'day, Rex. How are you?
Not too bad, John. I hope you're well, too.
Fighting fit. How can I help you today?
Well, I just wonder, you leave your will to be equally divided between your family, for example, if you've got daughters and sons.
Yep.
What rights legally do the in-laws have when you find that your family marry second times and so forth? What do they have any legal rights
The only persons who have any rights in terms of your will are your spouse or your de facto partner, your children, and that includes stepchildren, and any person under the age of 18 who is dependent, is a dependent of yours at the time of your death. So the in-laws, so where, by that I assume you mean like daughters-in-law or sons-in-law.
They
don't have any rights. However, if you leave your estate equally, say, to your daughters, and then one of the daughters fails to survive, normally most wills will say that I leave my estate to such of my children as may survive, and if any of them fail to survive, their share goes equally to their children. So in that situation, it may be that the son-in-law may be able to exercise some influence in relation to what happens to that share of the estate, but the ultimate decisions on what happens to that share of the estate would be made by the executors under the will. And then secondly, it would depend on how you've left that share of the estate. So if you've left it simply to your daughters and with provision for grandchildren, then if you said, you know, that the grandchildren can take it 18 years or take it 21 years, they would then get control. And once they've got control, if they decide to give that to their father, well, there's not a great deal you can do about it. The only way that you can protect against that would be to put the share of the estate into what's referred to as a testamentary discretionary trust, so that it's in that trust for the benefit of your daughter during her lifetime, and that would include the right to be able to, or not the right, but a discretion to the trustees to pay the money out to the daughter if she wanted the funds. But then if something happened to the daughter, the terms of that trust can protect the share for the infant beneficiaries or the children, and perhaps provide that they won't get anything until, or the capital, until they're at a much older age, so maybe 30 years of age, so that you know, they don't sort of get all the money and blow it on a holiday.
Yeah, I see. So basically leaving it to your daughters, and if they pass away before you do, it then can be covered in your will.
Yep.
that part goes to their children.
Yes, yeah, that's right. But once it's...
And there's no argument about that legally.
No, but once it's passed to your children, so to your daughters... It becomes their if your will says I leave, you know, equal shares to all my daughters, once you've passed away, they become legally entitled to that share, and then that share will then go according to their will. So if they then have a will that says I leave all my worldly possessions to my husband, then it would certainly end up with the son-in-law.
I appreciate all that.
All right, then.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Rex, no trouble at all.
Bye-bye.
And the time on 4CRB is just coming up to 11 minutes to 10. South of the border, that's 11 minutes to 11. The Law and You is the program, 5520888. We're quickly approaching that last 10 minutes of the program, so if you do need some advice this morning, may I suggest that you give us a call right now, 5520888. And we say good morning to our first caller from the fairer sex. Good morning, Helen. How are you?
Oh, good morning, and I'm very well, thank you.
Thank
very
you.
Very well
interviewed. How can I help you?
I beg your pardon?
I say, how can I help you today?
Well, I'm hoping you can help me. It's very easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's regarding a divorce and settlement, which has gone through after the settlement and the divorce. How long have you got, after everything's been signed and sealed, how long have you got before, you know, can it go on for 12 months, 18 months before the final payment to the divorced person?
Well, it'll depend on the terms of the property settlement deed that's been, or orders that have been made. So the trigger to finalise the property settlement side of things is the decree, the divorce decree, and you then have 12 months from then to bring an application for property settlement if it wasn't already brought. And then that will be settled normally by either orders of the court or alternatively consent orders with a deed of settlement attached, which sets out what the parties want. Now, once that's occurred, that's basically the end of the line. The only exception to that would be if one of the parties lied about their position and it became known at a later date that, in fact, there were substantial assets that hadn't been disclosed. And in those circumstances, I think that it would be open to the party who was affected by the non-disclosure to bring an application to reopen the matter.
Right. No, there's been nothing like that. I just wondered, you know, when you get half at one stage and you're going to receive half at another stage, and I just wondered, you know, I was listening to you before and I thought I must have misunderstood. I thought you had 12 months to clean it all up.
No, well, that depends. When you get paid will depend on the terms of the deed or the terms of the order. So if the order said, you know, that you're to receive $100,000 within 30 days of the date of the order and a further $100,000 in 12 months' time, then that's the time limit. Now, if the party fails to pay the further $100,000 in 12 months' time, that's technically a breach of the terms of the order. So if you were not satisfied with the explanation and when the balance payment might be made, you could go back to court because technically the person is in contempt of the orders that were made. And so you could have the whole thing re-examined by the judge to say, well, why didn't you make the payment and what are you going to do to sort it out? And then there would probably be more likely, more rigorous orders made at that stage to sort it out.
All right. Okay. Well, you answered my question. Thank you very much.
Fantastic, Helen. Thank you for that. Well, the time has just passed 8 minutes to 10 here on 4CRB, 8 minutes to 11 south of the border. And we say good morning to Lindsay. G'day, Lindsay. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, John. Yourself?
Well, indeed. How can I help you today?
Mate, I've got a bit of a query for you. Cut long story short, we lost a lot of money through a POSI scheme through our superannuation from our ex-financial advisor. Didn't advise us that our assets had been frozen and all that. And being a bit of a computer nerd, I looked up on the computer and I found out about this Astara strategic fund that we were in with our super. And I won't mention the gentleman's name, but he is a registered con man throughout the world. And we went through the financial ombudsman. And well, that was, we didn't do any good there. They wrote back and said, well, you know, you have to prove that fraud was intended. Now, I'm like, I'm not the only person that got stung by this through this gentleman. And as I say, I'm no good on the computer, but I found this gentleman's name through the New York Stock Exchange and, and various other stock exchanges around the world, and he's been barred from every one of them.
So is that is he the person who advised you to go into the scheme, or was it your financial advisor who advised you?
That had set the
scheme up. Right.
Yes,
well, what I think you need to do is, I don't know whether it's a question about fraud. I think it's more a case of negligence, isn't it? It's the negligence of your financial advisor.
Well, we did put that in writing to the financial ombudsman, which, as I say, we didn't get a positive result. They said that I had to prove that our financial advisor at the time knew about this. Well, obviously, he wouldn't.
No, but negligence is not the owners, or the level of proof for negligence is not as high as fraud. I mean, fraud is really a criminal matter where the onus of proof is beyond reasonable doubt, whereas negligence, it is on the balance of probabilities and what a reasonably competent financial advisor might have done. What I would suggest you do, you say that there were quite a number of people who were stung by this in Australia?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, what I would suggest, what I would suggest you look at is consulting one of the firms that take on no-win, no-fee class actions because they might be prepared to take the matter on at no cost to you and advertise for other people who've been affected by the scheme and bring a claim on your behalf against the... do you know how many clients your particular financial advisor was advising?
Not offhand, no, but I do believe it to be quite a lot because...
Yeah, well, if there were quite a number, then that would certainly be the basis for a class action, in my opinion. So I would certainly be going to... ring the Queensland... Are you in Queensland?
Yes, I am, John.
Ring the Queensland Law Society.
Yes.
I'll give you their number. It's 1300.
1300, yep.
367.
367.
757.
757, yes.
Yes. Actually, I'll tell you what I would more suggest you do is there's a group in Brisbane called Financial Rescue. And
right,
the
yes.
fellow that runs it is a fellow called Neil Kendall, K-E-N-D-A-L-L. I've interviewed Neil on this program in the past, and I'll give you the number for Financial Rescue.
Yes.
It's 1300.
1300.
095.
095.
561.
561.
And they take on matters for people who've been affected by negligent advice, and they've had some outstanding outcomes, I know. So if you ring Financial Rescue and tell them that I recommended you call, I think they would be a good starting point.
Oh, okay. Many thanks. Mm. I appreciate that. As I say, this has been going on now for 2009.
Yep.
And I just.
Yeah. Well, you need to act fairly quickly, Lindsay. So get on to them straight away. All right.
Sure, my friend, and many thanks, mate. And God bless you.
And you too. All the very best. Bye now.
Thanks, mate. Bye bye.
Time's just past 10:03 right here on 4CRB. We're quickly pushing up to the news, and so we'll have to say a very quick hello to John. How are you, John?
Hello. Thank you.
Have you got a quick query, I hope?
Yes, a quick query.
Good
please.
On you. How can I help?
Could you explain to me the difference between a prescribed power of attorney and an enduring guardian, please?
Well, I know what an enduring guardian is. Enduring guardian is basically someone who has a guardianship. Normally, that would probably be a New South Wales term. In New South Wales, they have an enduring guardianship document, and that permits the guardianship or the rights of the guardian to continue on even after the person loses capacity, and particularly when they've lost capacity to make financial decisions. I've never heard the term prescribed power of attorney. The only powers of attorney I know of are a general power of attorney, which you can have in New South Wales, but it does have a paragraph in it which says that it will endure notwithstanding the person loses capacity, or alternatively, an enduring power of attorney in Queensland. But, John, unfortunately, we'll have to leave it there because we're just about to go to news. If you want any more, stay on the line. I'll speak to you further. Till next week, goodbye. God bless.